Doubled Up, a podcast where we sometimes actually talk about cute queer content. My name is Grace, and my co-host is Hudson. How are you doing, Hudson?
Hi, I'm here, and I'm queer, mm-hmm. and it's June, mm-hmm. and we're talking about something good and wholesome instead of something that makes me want to rip my hair out, so I'm having a good time.
Yeah, I mean, this is all in part to our guest today. We're joined by a special guest. We have Felipe with us. Felipe, how are you doing?
Hello, I am doing well. I just rewatched the episode again, so you might hear me sniffling because it was so beautiful at the end when everyone came and gave her a hug, but I love this show, and I'm so sad that it was canceled, and I think it was quite disrespectful to me personally.
To you, they did say that. It just said in the cancellation notices because of Felipe. You probably saw in the episode title, but we are talking about One Day at a Time. We're talking about season 1, episode 13, although we did watch some other episodes that sort of link to this episode. And this episode came out in January of 2017. They released this whole season at once as a Netflix show, moved to Pop TV, right? And then was canceled.
Yeah, moved to Pop TV, then they tried to air it on CBS, see if it could find its footing there, and then it got canceled because the fourth season got shut down because of COVID, and then they moved to CBS, and then they tried to rehome it, but no, it didn't stick. And
what I didn't realize was that this is a remake, mm-hmm. like this is a reboot. Like there's a show from 1975 to 1984 that was called One Day at a Time.
Yeah, do you know? So did you see any episodes where the mom was at her group therapy session?
No.
There's an actress who plays the moderator of the group therapy, and it's the original mom from the original series. So it's just a cute little Easter egg they have in there.
Yeah, I was telling someone that we were covering the show, and they were like, "Oh, you must be doing the old one." And I was like, "I didn't even know there was an old one." But yeah, Felipe, why'd you pick this? Why'd you pick the show?
So I wanted to talk about something with a Latinx core, whether I thought of some episodes of Glee, but those were like probably gonna not hold up, and I don't know, it's still kind of raw and sad to watch stuff with Naya Rivera in it. So then I was like, this is wholesome, it's not new, but I really wanted to watch it, and it's so much fun, it's so pure, and they do have like heavy discussions on like all sorts of topics like PTSD, LGBT representation, race, and what it means to be like an immigrant. So like, it's a great show. It's really funny, but also like really serious at times. So I just want to talk about it. And this was a great episode. Elena is one of my favorite characters in television. So this whole family, I love them so much. So just a chance to revisit time with them is welcome. And I love this podcast. So when you were like, do you want to be on it? It's like, let's talk about this.
Yeah. Oh,
gosh, thanks for loving our podcast. Yeah. You know, sometimes I feel like we're just talking into the void.
This certainly is the most recent thing we've mm-hmm. watched. It breaks the record. I think the other thing we had watched was Caitlyn Jenner's TV show.
Or Community.
Or Community. Ooh,
Community might, probably. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I had never seen this show. I hadn't watched an episode. I've heard really good things, but I had never really like taken the dive. I have a bit of an avoidance for shows that are like laugh track. Like it really threw me off at the beginning, and like it feels like they're telling you like when to laugh at a joke. It's like I want to choose when I laugh at the joke.
Yeah.
But like very quickly, like even the first episode I watched was Sex Talk, which is the one where the neighbor comes over and like tries to use the computer, and it's Alex's computer, but like there's porn on it, and like
when they that one has one of my favorite jokes ever. It's was it Cars 2? And then she's like, no, it's more like Cars 3.
More like Cars 3. And immediately, like, by the end of that scene, you just had, like, everybody coming in and sort of realizing there's porn on the computer. So you have the grandma and you have her partner. You just, like, instantly, like, I think just, like, really adore this, like, group of people that they have on the show. It's really well cast, and it is really funny.
Yeah, I was also very resistant to watching something with a laugh track, honestly. Like, I tried to watch the first episode right when the series premiered because so many people, like, on my Facebook feed were like, oh, this show is, like, actually really good. And I just couldn't. Like, the first episode, I just couldn't get through it. And then I guess that when season 2 was dropped, like, someone was like, oh, there's, like, a non-binary character in this season. I was like, oh, I gotta check it out. And I accidentally watched the episode we're talking about today as my first episode. So I was like really confused. I was like, what is going on? Because I don't know what happened. I guess somebody watched it on my Netflix and it just like started me from episode 13. But then I went back and watched the first season and all the second season, and it just like became a comfort TV show for me. I was like going through some like rough stuff at the time, and it like really made me feel better. And it was just like, even though like some of the matter is like pretty, you know, dark, it's like, it still like, you know, gave me the warm and fuzzies. Yeah,
like this episode, the one that we watched is like, it's the day of Elena's kisses, and it's like Penelope is just like kind of going wild. Like there's so many people there trying to make sure like everything's perfect. But like the big worry of this episode, right, is basically that Elena her dad is around, and she wants to come out. Did she come out to her dad in this episode? I'm mixing. I watched like three episodes together.
Yeah, she comes out in this episode to him, so this is like a mini arc, like you mentioned. So there's the 10 and 11, which is kind of she comes out to her family, and then 12 is when the dad comes back for the quinceañera, I believe, right. And then like he has his own. It's more focused on Penelope and him, but then this episode kind of brings the two storylines together.
Yeah, and so she wants to come out because she's come out to everybody else, and everybody else has been pretty okay with it. I love the scene. I don't know whether it's in Sex Talk or Pride and Prejudice, where Penelope like talks. Sorry, what's the grandmother's name? I clearly haven't watched enough of it.
Lydia,
and Lydia's like whole range of like, I'm not okay with it, to them like being like, we've been created in God's image, so like it's fine. I'm over it. Like, is like one of my favorite scenes. In TV, it's like it's so funny. It's so good.
I love the use of the curtains, like for dramatic mm-hmm. effect, where she like goes behind and hides in the curtains and then opens it. Like I think it's all pretty quick, right? Where she goes back in the curtain to talk to God, and then God forgives, or like. Not forgives, but gives her
just permission. Like, it's fine. It's like, you know, we've all been created in God's image. It's whatever. I love her, you know, whatever. It's great. She's like, when's the parade? Like, that's it. She's like, cool with it. But very worried. Elena like assumes, I feel like in the episode, like, well, that she'll tell her dad will like have the same reaction. Her dad like does not have the same reaction. He's very much like, this is a phase. Like, Penelope, what are you doing? Like, letting her like believe this. She doesn't know. She's a teenager. Blah, 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 blah. And then he doesn't show up for the kinses, and that's where you get like during the father-daughter dance, Penelope comes up, and then eventually they all hang out together. There's also some really great stuff about like Elena not really feeling super comfortable wanting to wear a dress and trying to like figure out even like what she's okay with. I feel like that was done really well in terms of she's like, okay, I'll like wear my Doc Martens under the dress. And by the end of the episode, Lydia has made her like this like, you know, suit type thing that also has like a hint of femininity to it, like the top is like sort of, and so it's just like it's Elena's style, and Elena feels like is pretty comfortable that day, and I don't know, I just really like that stuff too.
It's a pantsuit.
A pantsuit, yeah. Is it? Yeah, it is.
Like a Hillary Clinton pantsuit.
Yeah, exactly the style they're going. I know. I just thought it was cute of like, because Elena, you can like, I think it's just done really well in the sense of like Elena sort of knows what she wants, that she doesn't necessarily want to wear a dress, but it's sort of like, you know, this thing of like queer people. I feel like we like are constantly trying to make sure that other people, you know, like agreeing to other people to like make sure that like other people don't feel uncomfortable of like Lydia's making the dress, or grandma's like making the dress, and so for her like she's like not wanting to say like outright no, like I'm not wearing, you know, that, so like trying to like find her own style, and then eventually like when she comes back and it's like, here, like wear this, like I've made you this, and it's like exactly what Elena like sort of wants. It's just a really cute moment. I think it's really well done.
Yeah, and I feel like for a lot of queers that's kind of like a moment they wish they had with their family growing up. Oh, you know,
yes.
Like I, like, you know, as a Jewish person, I went through my own, I'll call it a b'nai mitzvah. It's, that's kind of the gender neutral version of bar mitzvah. Yeah. And I was not happy about my dress at all. And I have a lot of photos. I have a video cassette that I have not taken out of the sleeve in a very long time, but I'm sure I look like a very awkward 13-year-old. And if my parents actually listened to me and were like, oh, you don't want to wear a dress, I probably would have been so much happier at that.
Yeah, you kind of need that like validation from somebody else to like give you the okay, because otherwise you feel like you're making everybody else like uncomfortable, right? Is this weird thing I think that queer people have to navigate.
Yeah, and yeah, it literally was like, this is someone's fantasy and it's beautiful. I love that like TV can kind of you know, create and, you know, recreate your story from your childhood that may have not been that great. And, you know, hopefully allow, you know, queer kids who are going through whatever their life, you know, rite of passages, be able to like have that conversation with their family if they don't want to wear the stereo or like the gender, gendered clothing that their parents expected them.
Yeah, I remember I think we've talked about this a little bit before, of the idea that like, oh, I wish I had been like out earlier than I was. Like, you know, I came out as like gay when I went to university, and then, you know, about 25 when I came out as trans. And, you know, there's a little bit of the like jealousy of like, oh, I wish I was younger when I got to, you know, so that I, you know, I got to have these, like the milestones that people have, like would fit either, you know, my like sexual identity or my gender identity, you know, that those things would line up. Obviously, like, at the same time, like, you come out when you can come out, like, you come out when you are ready, like, there's no, it's the right time when it's the right time, and I believe very strongly in that, and so, I don't know, this was nice to be like, yeah, she gets to have, like, the kinses that she, like, you know, kind of, like, you know, it's very much hers, it's not, like, something that was, like, put upon her, which is very sweet.
Yeah, and I just... Also, everyone just kind of rallying behind her after her dad's, like, a huge asshole. Like, it's, like, you know, it's very not something that you see on TV. It's not something you hear about, because I feel like we're so used to these negative portrayals. And it's just so nice to see her mom and her grandma and her brother and her mom's boss / her grandmother's companion, you know, all... And the neighbor all just like being there for her and like no, this is who she is, like, you know, it's so hard to like talk in depth about this because we're just like, you know, gonna give this show so much praise because it handled all these topics like better than any other show we've watched, you know, so far.
Yeah, I mean, we can certainly like go on and on about like why, you know, this was good representation. I'm interested, like, Felipe, you talked about like wanting to have something that was like Latin or Hispanic, like why was it something like important, and then what was it about this show that like is different than other shows, like other representation? Because I think the one thing about this, like, hold up, I think when we initially talked about it, Hudson, about this idea of like we can talk about like queer representation, but I think the other thing, like, at some point we could be diving into like, you know, other, you know, representation that's on TV. And so I'm interested, Hudson or Felipe, to hear from you about like why this show like seems to be like very important in terms of like Latino Hispanic like representation on TV.
So in terms of as a whole, before I get into like the intersectionality between like Latinx identity and queer identity in the show, but the show does a great job of like talking about the stereotypes presented with like Latin identity. So we talked about Penelope and that she's in a support group for army vets, and there's a whole episode about like she gets on medication but she keeps it secret from her mother because it's like very shameful to be on medication in like Latin communities, and her mother is very old school, she loves going to church, she talks about Cuba all the time. So in terms of like the queer representation, it was really like cool for me to see that she was super accepting very immediately, that scene that we talked about earlier. So that was something that I really love about the show, is that they'll talk about these topics and then they'll have, it's very heartwarming, but then they still like go there with like the dad. This episode stood out to me because it's like very, a sense of Latino machismo, where the dad, mm-hmm. it was like very, he became insecure because his daughter is not straight. So then that's like a reflection of him. I feel like that's what I got from the episode. He sees it that way, even though Penelope disagrees. And obviously that's not the case. So I just love that they go there with these episodes and they'll tackle these hard subjects. The friend that showed up, the Diabla, as Lydia calls her, Carmen, she, mm-hmm. like one of the first episodes is even like, the exploration of like Penelope thinks they might be like there might be more between them as friends, but then she's actually like hiding Carmen because Carmen's family was deported. So I don't remember the specifics of that, but then that's why she like moved away, and Schneider was able to fly her back. So there's like all these topics that are really important to discuss, and then they talk about it, and there's so much fun and campiness as well in the episodes. There I laughed so many times, but I also cried at the end of the episode. So
yeah, it's honestly, like, yeah, I need to rewatch the entire series. I forgot about the Carmen subplot, to be honest. I haven't gone back and watched the show in a while. I never actually finished it, just because I think, like, it got really confusing with COVID and, you know,
time so kind of. I truthfully have not seen the last three episodes. Part of it was, like, I thought it was going to get canceled, so I was like, I'm going to savor these for a rainy day, and then I was like, I don't want to watch it. I don't want it to end. Part of me, like, if I don't watch it, it didn't end.
Oh, my God, the last episode was animated?
Yeah, because it was COVID, so they did a political episode.
Wow, that's wild.
Yeah. Go ahead.
No, you go.
Oh, it's just, they do some fun ideas and concepts, and it's just a blast, and they introduce more characters. Like, Sid is not in this season, but there's a whole episode about how Sid doesn't like the word girlfriend that Elena keeps using because they are non-binary. And then they come up with the term significant other as the term that Elena is going to use. And they're just such a fun, kooky couple. I love them together.
An episode called Deserve with Love. That's why, that's like wild to me. Like, I don't know. Just like the use of, like, I think the, like, more like, I don't say non-traditional, but, like, you know, the other non-binary pronouns. I don't know.
Neo-pronouns.
Is that what they're called? Neo-pronouns? Yeah. I think it's not surprising that this show is a show that, like, wants to tackle these, like, topics and dive into them, and at the same time it is, like, it is just surprising to see, like, maybe not a Netflix show, but, like, a modern, like, I think it's just, like, the format of it. I'm so used to these, like, multi-cam, like, sitcoms where, like, you know, most of the, you know, it's on this, like, you know, the house set, you know, the apartment set, you know, and, like, with the laugh track. I'm just used to it being so much more, like, tame than, like, what this show tries to do, right? Like, and, you know, it's funny because, like, I'm saying that's tame, and then, like, you look at some of the stuff that, like, Two and a Half Men was doing. It's not, like, it's not exactly tame. And yet, for some reason in my brain, that's, like, that is a show that would be on, like, you know, in syndication, like, at, like, 6 p.m. in our house, whereas, like, with some of the stuff that this show is tackling, it feels like it would be harder to do. But I think it's important. It's good that it, you know, the show was made. It's sad that it's too bad that it's been canceled.
Yeah, and this show, I feel like, would never find its footing on a channel like NBC, because NBC has created the idea that a three-camera sitcom is very fluff. It is very, every episode is self-contained and, like, can be put in syndication and make money for the producers for years on end. Where this show is like, no, we're going to have multi-episode arcs. We're going to have episodes where there's not going to be a lot of laugh track because somebody's having a panic attack, and we're going to show, like, the real, what really happens when people go through, you know, serious things. So I think, yeah, it was never meant to, I feel like it was never going to be able to do well on a channel like CBS, sadly. Pop TV might have been its best chance, but who has Pop TV? I don't have Pop TV. I know you're Canadian, so
I had Pop TV for a few years because that's how I would watch Big Brother After Dark. I was like probably the one viewer that they had.
Do people have cable? I feel like I have cable, but I mean, like, who does these days? Like, I have it because I like sports. Like, that's why I have cable.
My mother has cable, and because we live in the same city, I can use her cable login usually to watch live television, but she doesn't have Pop TV.
Yeah, we have cable as well, but that might change soon. But yeah, we don't have Pop TV either, which is such a shame.
Yeah, that's such, like, there's another good show on Pop TV, and it's not a queer show, so we'll never talk about it, but it's called Florida Girls, and it's, like, very funny.
Schitt's Creek was on Pop TV in the U.S., right?
Yeah.
That's where it was.
Really?
Yeah.
Nobody watched it on Pop TV. Everyone watched it on Netflix.
Yeah. But maybe the thing is, though, you had to wait for it to drop on Netflix versus it probably was earlier on Pop
TV. Yeah. I remember seeing trailers for the first season back when Big Brother 16 was on, maybe 17, because I remember, what is this show, Schitt's Creek? What is that?
It's such a bad name. I'm so embarrassed. Like, this is our, like, big Canadian, like, breakout moment, and the TV show is called Schitt's Creek. Like, it made me not watch it for a long time.
I watched it because Eugene Levy and Catherine are, you know, comedy royalty to me, because I grew up watching, like, Best in Show and like all, you know, those sort of movies.
We could cover one of those. We could cover for sure. What did I just watch? I watched what's the one with a play in a small, it's waiting, a very small waiting town. Waiting for Guffman. Yeah, Waiting for Guffman, because like the director is very like, he puts on like a very like camp. He talks about his wife, but he's clearly not.
But in Best in Show has Jane Lynch as the lesbian dog trainer, and what's her name, Jennifer Coolidge as her girl, becomes her girlfriend at the end of the movie. Spoiler alert. Yeah, we should definitely do that.
Yeah, so I mean, there's not a ton in this like episode, but I don't know. Like I do like the you know, the storyline of like, I don't love it, but like, you know, this her mom, everybody who's like around her and is around her all the time, like, has so much support for her, and then she comes out to her father, who's so, like, I'm leaving.
Forgive me, because I don't remember. Was the episode where did you watch the episode where Penelope goes out to a lesbian bar with her friend? Was that one of the episodes? Okay, because I didn't remember if that was season one or season
Carla
two.
Carla from Scrubs. Is her lesbian friend? Yes.
Yeah. Okay. I didn't remember if that was the stretch of episodes or that was like an early season two. Because there's, I think they revisit like Penelope. Still, like, it's still a journey for Penelope throughout the course of the show. But that's one of another memorable episode where she's like still like, because she's supportive of her daughter, but she doesn't know what to do to an extent.
Yeah,
I think that's perfect. Like, that's such a good, like, I feel like, eventually where, like, my parents, like, got to, and the point where I was like, okay, I'm it's all fine, I'm all good, was like, even when I knew my parents were like, didn't know what to do, I could tell they still wanted to support me. And that was like the thing as like a parent that I like sort of needed. I just needed for them like to almost trust me that I was like, I know like that this is the thing I need to do. And even if you don't understand it, or you don't get it yet, like just come, you have to come along with me for like the ride. Like I remember my dad one time, and this was like when I was out as gay, and he was like, you know, he was trying so hard to not be uncomfortable. And he's like, you know, if you ever have a friend who you spend a significant amount of time with, it's like a boyfriend. It's like, yeah, like that. Like, he's like, we can talk about it. And it's like, he's trying so hard to like, say that it's okay for us to talk while also being the most awkward conversation I had had up until that point. And like, that's just what I needed from my parents, was like, you know, someday they'll like understand, every day they'll like understand a bit more, get there a bit more, but I don't need them to know, have every answer, because like even I don't have every answer, you know.
Yeah, so. You know, that's something I wanted to talk about, was, you know, is like, there are there a lot of shows out there that explore like the parent side about their kid coming out? Like, I don't ever like seek out that sort of media, but I can't really think of a lot of shows that really delve into like the parent's point of view on that, so it's really refreshing to see that. And that's like another thing, like a normal three camera CBS sitcom would never cover, is like, you know, the emotional hardship you go through when your kid does come out, because, you know, it just shatters what you thought about them, you know. And it's pretty interesting to watch as a queer person, because, you know, even though your parents' journey isn't at top of mind, I think it's something you should think about. And like, as older you get, like, you know, you realize that they've grown, they've gotten more perspective on like LGBT issues. And I wish we could have seen the show go to like season 10 and see, you know, Penelope just being like, you know, gender and sexuality are a spectrum, you know, maybe one day I would meet the perfect person and they were a woman, blah, blah, blah. And you know what? That's okay. You know?
Yeah, no, I can't think of other examples unless it's like relative to a conversation they're having with a child, like their child. Like I can definitely think of, not to go back to Glee, but a few scenes with Bert and Kurt where like it's them together, but not kind of like Bert by himself. It's like understanding and like having a storyline, or even an episode. That entire episode was like dedicated, at least Penelope's storyline, to that. So that's not something we see a lot of, but hopefully evolve. Like, that's an interesting perspective that stories, like whether it's a movie, a TV show, can explore more in the future, like the parents' perspective and like how they can like learn and be better.
Yeah, I mean, so much of the trying to do a quick Google, and so much of it is mostly like about, like, I'm searching like parents' perspective, but it's mostly like when the parents, so they're like, well, the Modern Family, and I'm like, no, it's not the same. So I feel like they're really aren't. I think Glee is a good example. Is Roseanne's daughter?
No, her queer? Sister.
Her sister is, yeah.
Or was it her mom? No, it was her mom. So, okay. Roseanne ends being like, the series ends with this weird like thing where Roseanne like does like a voiceover where she's like saying she lied about everything that happened in the final season, and that like it's like her mom comes out as a lesbian in the final season, but in like Roseanne's head it was her mom, but in actuality it was her sister. It's really weird. And then Roseanne gets, in a certain episode, she gets like hit on by a woman, as what's her name, what is that actress's name, she's like a bisexual, Sandra Bernhardt. And she's like a recurring character. Roseanne was a very queer and cool show until Roseanne decided to come out as a
turf. What happened? Yeah, that's what happened, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I struggled to think of some, but I just think it's like, it's well done in the sense of, it's not like, obviously Penelope is like the main character of that show. I feel like, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, I've only watched 3 episodes, but like, I feel like she is. And so, yeah, I mean, obviously they're not going to like make her like, they don't want to like make her like not support her daughter. And yet at the same time, it's not like this like immediate, like they let their characters have a bit of like, I don't want to call it a flaw that like she doesn't know, but like it's not like she just has all the answers, is immediately accepting and like knows everything. I do like the conversation they have when she first comes out the next morning, where she's like trying to be very like know all the lingo and all this stuff, and just is like, "Mom, we don't have to just like talk about gay stuff now. Like it's fine. Like our relationship can be like basically what it was before."
Except, yeah,
you know,
it's kind of awkward, yeah. You know, like
it is awkward for sure.
I went to this coming out seminar so when I was a teenager. Okay. There used to be this like LGBT youth conference in my county, and the first year I went to the coming out seminar because I wasn't out to my parents yet at age 14. And they talk a lot about, you know, the whole like you know, them, you know, having to like mourn a child that doesn't exist anymore, of like what they expected from you, and as well as like it can be uncomfortable because you're kind of saying, this is like, I'm a sexual person, you know, when you come out. And like, I've like thought about it a lot. Like if I were to have kids, how would I want to go about that? And I'm just like, oh, you know, it's really simple. Just say like, when you have somebody that you like and you want me to meet them, just tell me about them. Like I just don't gender it, you know, like, wow.
Yeah, it's so funny that like, yeah, this idea that like queerness is inherently like sexualized. It's so ridiculous. Because like straightness is also like, there's so much like the stuff you see when like people are like, you know, to a very small child, like, is that your girlfriend? She's like, what the hell? Like, they're like 6. What
are you doing? He's a little heartbreaker.
Yeah. Have either of you watched Baroness von Sketch Show? It's a Canadian sketch comedy show. It's on Netflix. If you haven't seen it, it's very funny. And there's an episode where like, she's at a party and there's a baby, there's like a toddler who's like sitting up and like he's very young or whatever, and someone makes a joke like, oh, look out, he's a little heartbreaker, because like they look at each other and the baby laughs or whatever. And later, like as she's leaving, she's like, I just want to be like upfront that like I'm not looking for a relationship with your toddler. And she's like, what? And she's just like explaining that like, well, you said earlier that like he's a little heartbreak, like I'm just not interested. And like she's like trying to like I mean, yeah, it's very funny. Anyway, I would highly recommend it.
I kind of wanted to ask, like, this isn't a question about like if it holds up, but Grace, overall, what did you think of the show itself? Like, would you watch more episodes, like, if you had the time?
I definitely will watch more of this show. It's a thing that, like, I started, and then I'm a very, like, the thing is as soon as I watch, like, season 1, episode 1, I will have to watch, like, and it's not like there's that much, but it's this thing in my brain, right, of, like, I will watch it.
Yeah.
And I will, like, binge watch a lot of it. But I did really like all 3 episodes, and I liked even the stuff that wasn't, like queer, surprising. Yeah. I know, it's weird. I like, you know, it doesn't have to be queer content for us to like it, but like, I like in the episode, I think it's the middle one. It's like, is it Schneider?
Yeah.
Will I ever like Schneider, or am I just ever?
Yes, you. I think like Schneider. I think you will like Schneider more, and like you will root for him. But like, there are moments that like he's definitely. I think he becomes rootable at a point, but he might not be.
He also knows he's like a bit of a wiener, right? Like
it took me a while to not realize that wasn't Paul Rudd.
Oh, that's Paul Rudd.
I see him as like generic white man. Yeah. Like, and like, I understand why they have him on the show. So white people have someone to relate to. Fine. I guess like if that's what they need to have a token white person.
I think also in one of the early episodes, Penelope has some coworkers that there's one that's much less likable than Schneider. So then you're like, okay, Schneider's just like annoying. He's not like unlikable at times.
Oh yeah, I mean, white girl.
The white girl. Like, I'm thinking of the white guy. The doctor. Yeah.
In Kinsa's, the stuff of like him sort of like, cause she's like when he comes to pick her up, or is it this, or like he has to pick people up at the airport.
Yeah.
And he's like, I only know so many Spanish words. And he's like doing it. I do feel like they know what his role is, which is like, he is a little bit like, he's off putting. Like he's a little bit of like a jerk. Like there's the episode, I think, where when Elena comes out, she goes over to talk to him. The one thing I guess, like, I know that she like goes to the bar with that other woman, but like, is it a thing that they ever talk about? Like, she doesn't have like close like, why is Schneider her like the person she's like going? I guess because it's across the street or like across the apartment hall or whatever.
Are you talking about Penelope?
Yeah.
So like, Penelope's closest friends end up becoming like her love interest, Schneider, and then the support group. Like, one of my favorites. I don't know if she was in that episode. I forget her name, but it's the person who tells her to go to about the support group and. The first time, and let me just Google her character name because it's going to bother me all night. But she's one of my favorites. She's so funny. And then her friend that takes her to the bar is another great character. But she doesn't have a lot of outside besides Schneider, like adults that she interacts with.
Right. But, you know, some of the, I feel like they do know like how to write him so that he's, I know that like he is the white guy, like he's the, in this like Latinx show, but I feel like he's like written fairly well. Like there's the I like the storyline of like where he has to take Alex like to the baseball game out of town, and like when he eventually comes back, and he like, because he's sort of like being as like closely supervising him as like his mom would, and then they come back and he got in trouble and he's like, no, I was so mad, and she's like, you've done it. I don't know, I thought the show was cute. I thought it was well done. Like it doesn't seem like a show that I would have like really liked, but I will dive into more of it and watch.
I found their names, Jill and Ramona. Ramona was the one who took her to the bar, but Jill is the other one that I really like. Did you have a favorite character besides like
I like Penelope a lot. I mean, I Penelope's like especially the stuff about the with the Kinsas, like her planning, her like frantic, like everything needs to be in the right, you know, that is a bit of me. Like I love a routine. I love schedule. I like things, you know, in order and place. And this is what we're doing. Like I really felt that. And then I also really liked Alex. I thought Alex was like, you know, he's a child actor, but like, I thought the scene where like, this is in Sex Talk when Penelope thinks that it's Alex who has been watching porn. And he's like, I've been trying to avoid this conversation my entire life. Like, I don't want to be here talking to you about it. And he's like putting the blanket. And then when like they realize it's Elena who's been watching it, he comes over, he like puts the blanket. He's like, here, you'll need this. And he like, puts the blanket on Elena. And like, yeah. And then when he takes over the planning of the party, I thought it was really cute. They're all good. Lydia is like, I feel like the family are all really good. And then I could sort of take or leave Schneider at this point. And then
Stephen Tobolowsky, I could also take.
He's a very like, oh, it's that guy. He's in so much like, he was in like Heroes. He's in Glee.
Yeah, no. So I have never Silicon been able to Valley. Take anything he does seriously because I can only see him from his Glee character. I'm like, I don't like you. I don't like you. But no, I did want to touch on the fact that like, I love this show partially because I see like my family in it. Like I can see my grandmother as Lydia. I can see parts of my mom in Penelope. I can see my brother is Alex, and he gets mad at me and my mom because we say he looks like him and he acts like him, but he gets annoyed. But it's just, I love this family, and I wish I could spend more time with them.
You know, Stephen Tobolowsky has a podcast where he just tells autobiographical stories of his acting and personal life.
I would listen to that. Not gonna lie.
It's called The Tobolowsky Files. If anybody's interested, it's a monthly audio podcast. Wow.
I used to think he was the biggest homo, and then when I found out he was not, I was just like,
phew. He does come off a bit like, yeah, you probably would think he was. I feel like,
but he's just a little effeminate, you know, that kind of effeminate. He must be Jewish, feminine Jewish guy. You know, I know the type.
Tobolowsky, I don't know.
Yeah, if it's with a Y, it means he's 99% he's Jewish.
He's in the Goldbergs.
So,
I do love the like recurring bit of Lydia and him. I mean, like Lydia's never into that, but then like people think that she and him are a thing, and he thinks it too at times. But then she's like, "Qué mala que sucia," when Penelope brings it up, like thinking that that's what they were doing in Lydia's room instead of sewing the dress.
Yeah, like I feel a little bad for him, but like, you know, he kind of signed up for her. She said, you know, she said she's not interested. And oh my god, that reminds me of the episode where she gets high by accident off one of his. So like,
that's one of my favorite episodes.
He has like weed cough drops. Yeah. You know, it's California, and she takes one of them when like at the opera at the one opera. Night, and she just gets really fucking high, and it's super funny.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite moments of the season. Like Lydia's definitely my favorite. Like she I think in terms of like laughs per episode, it's always Lydia for me.
Yeah. The funny thing about Alex is like between season 3 and 4, he has the hugest growth spurt.
Yeah.
Like he goes from like 5'2" or maybe 4'10" to like 6 feet, it feels like, and he gets his voice drops. It's very, very jarring to watch back season 1 and see this small boy.
Yeah.
This is the problem when you cast these like kids of these ages. It's like the 2.5 men kid. They're just gonna grow up. Harry Potter. It's brutal.
Yeah. I mean, Boy Meets World. They grow.
Yeah.
The show. Yeah. And that's a weird one to think about too, because like Corey is like this tall, and I'm pointing out to like my shoulder height, which actually is not too
he's
short,
tiny.
But then goes to like 6 feet by the end of the show. Like he becomes a man. Like,
yeah, I mean,
he gets married, right?
Yeah.
But he's supposed to be 19, I think.
Who would get married at 19? The shows are so silly.
I mean, people do
so many TV shows.
I know. Actually, like where I'm from, like people, that's like what people would get married. Like there are many people I went to like high school with who have, like have children who are like turning 10. You're like, what?
Wow.
That's wow. Yeah.
There's
like also I just want to like talk about how great the show is. One thing I really love is like how they just don't care about touching like you know, hot political issues. Like I forget what season it's in, but Alex like deals with like, you know, someone telling him to go back to Mexico or something.
Yeah. I think it's early season 2. It's like at a baseball game or something, right? Yeah.
Really?
And they even kind of touch it on colorism because, like, Elena is light-skinned, and they kind of go into how she's like, I've never dealt with that. And, like, they're like, well.
Yeah. And that's, like, she always, like, a recurring bit is she's always, like, inserting her Latin identity, which is, like, very valid. But then they're like, well, you've never dealt with, like, racism like we have. And, like, she'll always say something like, I'm a Latina woman. And then they'll be, like, kind of, like, she's very whitewashed at times. So it's like they play it off for laughs, but that episode is like a very good episode. And then I think it ends with like Penelope yelling at someone in a restaurant, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much all of them are good ones.
Lydia gets her citizenship in one episode, so that's like another little arc that they go through.
The episode where Sid and Elena almost have sex.
Yeah.
That's another good one. I was like staying at my dad's house watching that, and like he walks in when they're like having that discussion, and like me as like I was like 28 years old, and I'm still just like, I don't want to watch this with my dad.
Hmm.
Yeah. Well, no. So I watched the episode with my mom. It was one of the. I don't know if you said you didn't see the CBS episodes.
It's one. I saw up to maybe like 3 or 4.
It's the one where Alex walks in on Penelope. That one's so uncomfortable. But yeah.
Oh, parents.
Such a great show. Like my biggest regret when I was in LA, I had, I think, a class that was at the same time as their taping. I really wanted to make it out to that taping at one point, but that won't happen. Who knows? Maybe they'll revive it again.
I'm not going to hold my breath.
It's been
canceled
3 times. That's brutal.
Well, it's like the Netflix stuff. Like they like 3 seasons and then it like cancels. That's like very standard for Netflix shows. So.
And the other issue is that due to like Netflix's contract, I don't think they can put it on a streaming service like season 4 for like a certain amount of time.
Well, I think it's on Paramount Plus, like only season 4 because of like the CBS stuff, but you can't watch seasons 1 to 3 there.
Yeah, but you can watch them on Netflix. So it's confusing. But I don't have Paramount Plus because the app is buggy as fuck on televisions, and I will complain about that until they fix it, because when they switched from CBS All Access to Paramount Plus, they did not fix the app. They just reskinned it, and that is so lazy. And they can't get like a team of 3 developers to just work on this app, rebuild it from the ground up. Take a year. You know what? It's fine. We just need a better app that doesn't crash every friggin' 5 minutes or do 5 minutes of ad, then crash, and then when you turn it back on, it's another 5 minutes of ad. So you watch 10 minutes of ad, just trying to watch a 10 minute segment of a television show.
No, I tried to download the iCarly episodes to watch at work where we don't have Wi-Fi, and it was very stressful because it said download, but it wouldn't work because the app kept crashing and like it wouldn't go through, and then it would work and it would play an ad and then it would crash, and so I feel seen by this comment.
Anytime I see news about Paramount Plus, I just write their app is shit. They need to update their app. Like, no one's gonna be this is gonna be unsuccessful until they fix their app. I am that spiteful because I'm so angry. Like, and I'm gonna have to resubscribe because freaking Big Brother's coming on. I'm just
and Drag Race All Stars too. Right?
The day before I needed to finish watching Survivor Vanuatu for the Ravis podcast Power Rankings. The app just wasn't working. It was like, no, you can watch the last episode. You can continue watching from the last episode you do watch, which for a random reason was like an episode of Edge of Game Extinction. Changers? I can't remember.
Oh.
I can't remember why. It was some random. I can't remember why I'd gone and watched it. It was because I was looking up answers to trivia questions for Twitch, and I was watching that scene because none of us remember this thing happening, and then it was like, yeah, you can keep watching, you can watch the finale of Edge of Extinction. I was like, I don't want to watch the finale of Edge of Extinction, I would like to watch like season 9, please. Anyway, the app does suck.
So if anyone from Paramount Plus or CBS or Paramount is listening, you're like very close to losing 3 customers.
I don't think I've currently subscribed to it.
I have it for a year. I'm stuck with it.
And the other thing is that in Canada, because Big Brother rights are controlled by Global TV, I can't watch old Big Brother seasons on Paramount Plus.
I have a link for you.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Why are you prepping? Are you prepping? Are they going to do Big Brother rankings next?
No, I don't think so. There's a bunch of seasons that I like. I used to go to summer camp every year, so I never watched a bunch of them in the middle there. I wonder how much, like the first season came out on January 6th, which seems to me like a good time to drop a series, which is like, actually, maybe not. I was trying to think, and then it's January 26th and it's February 8th. And I feel like that, like, I know it's winter, so that is probably good, but also at the same time, I feel like the new year is a bad, I feel like the hotspot of stuff coming out is like the end of the year or like right around the new year, like,
End of the month has been successful for them with other shows. Like, I know Sex Education was that time, like end of January was their regular dropping schedule before COVID. And that was a hot spot, but it depends on the show. Like, I think like this time of year is like a really hot spot, 'cause like then people are home from school, summer vacation with like the teachers. Like it depends on the time. Like, I feel like that it's really weird with like streaming services.
So why do you think a show like that, I mean, is it the thing of like that, you know, Netflix is notoriously like doesn't release their viewing numbers, right? So we don't actually really know like how much of a success it was, but this does feel like a show that people were like, I watched it, I love it. Like, it's really like, I rarely hear people be like, yeah, I tried, I didn't like it.
Do either of you watch This Is Us?
No. I watched the first season. Okay. And
the first episode of this last season, season 5, that aired in like late October, there was a conversation between Toby and Miguel where they were like, something something one day at a time, you just have to take everything one day at a time, and then they like reference it, and it's like the reboot is better, and Miguel was like, yeah, I was very involved in the campaign to save it, you don't cancel Rita Moreno. So that was like one of the writers got that in there.
Do you know what the first episode of the series is called, of One Day at a Time? It's called This Is It. It's not This Is Us.
Yeah,
it's pretty cool. But like, why do you think this show, like, why do you think it was like canceled? It feels like an important, like a show that's like a Latinx show. It's like a sitcom. It's like talking about heavy topics. Like, why do you think this like show, why do you think that they like canceled it? Or what is it about it that like made it like not like marketable or like not worthy of sticking around on Netflix?
I have my theories.
I think
money was an issue. Like, I can't remember her name. The woman who plays Penelope, she's like a pretty established actress. I've seen her on other television shows.
Yeah, Justina Machado? Justina Machado?
Yes.
Yes.
Like, she was on 16 Under. She went to do a bunch of guest spots on Superstore right when she was filming One Day at a Time. So I feel like she probably, you know, they were probably asking for more money. Same with Rita Moreno. She's an extremely, you know, well-regarded actress. And then Stephen Tobolowsky is also, you know, those three probably bumped up the budget. And then probably politics also, you know, like It was a political show, and maybe Netflix was like, we want to steer a little bit away from that. I don't know. Like, I honestly haven't really been paying attention to what Netflix has been putting out other than The Circle in the past couple of years. So I don't know if they've been doing, like, anything that political. Like, the last hardcore political thing I saw was, like, that show about capitalism they do, which, what is it? I forget what it's called, but it's, like, where they, like, talk about how terrible capitalism is. But I feel like, that's what I feel like. It's, like, a mixture of just, like, money and, like, well, it's a controversial show. So yeah, let's just get rid of it.
I also don't think it was advertised well at all. Like, I don't know how much stuff on Netflix is, these, like, at least at the time. But it, like, I only watched it because my mom started watching it. She, like, started watching it, like, after season 3 was dropped. So, and then that's when I found it. So it was not advertised well at all. And that might have been, like, a problem. Also, like you said, it was a very political show. And I don't know how white audiences didn't get it, especially if they don't grow up in, like, communities with, like, Latinx people where they don't understand some of the humor and some of the jokes, and that might have also been a factor as well. Like, if they don't have the white audience, they only have, like, the Latinx or the other BIPOC contingent. Mm-hmm. But with, like, some white fans, I don't know if it can carry, like...
Yeah, I was trying to think if, like, I'm trying to think back when I watched it, if... I watched stuff with subtitles, and so I was wondering whether the closed captioning... Like, sometimes, like, in shows... where if you have the closed captioning on, then, like, the stuff that, like, gets said in another language sometimes doesn't get translated, if this makes sense. So, like, yeah, if a character... I'm wondering, like, when a character says, like, clearly says something, like, to each other in Spanish, and it's, like, the pun... Like, a, you know, it is, yeah, a joke, or it's, like, the joke is that she's, like, saying something, whether it got translated or not.
Even I had to rewind the moment when they bring in the other family that was just going to, like, Silver Lake, that wasn't, right, like, a different Alvarez, like, because... Justina Machado was talking really fast in that scene, and, like, I understand Spanish, but, like, even that was, like, okay, rewind. So I can imagine if the subtitles don't come through properly, so.
Yeah. So you can cut this if this already came up, but I read an article that was, like, they purposely don't put subtitles for. Right.
No, that's what I was basically, yeah, asking. Yeah, and I feel like I like that as, like, I don't know what they're saying. Like, I don't need to, you know, I don't know. But I could see how some people might think that, like,
they don't.
Oh, well, I'm watching the show that's, like, and it's the joke isn't even subtitled or whatever, but, like, I don't know.
They don't break into, like, long-form Spanish conversation. Usually it's, like, a line or two, like, que mala, que sucia. Like, they'll, right, like Lydia will break into sometimes, but it's not like they'll have, like, full scenes in Spanish.
Yeah, and I also wonder, too, like, the Netflix, like, model of, like, and we were joking, yeah, I joked about, like, syndication, like, this is a show that, like, normally would have probably, like, been on syndication, but, like, I'm not sure that those, like, what are the shows that, like, people are, like, putting on in the background as, like, they're, like, you know, either, like, before they go to bed or something on during dinner that you don't, or while you're making dinner, like, those are the shows that I think have, like, these, and especially comedies, have these, like, sustained success.
Yeah. Like, this is that for me, but I don't know how much it is for other people.
Yeah, and I'm just trying to think if that's, like, a thing that, like, is it, like, you know, I feel like there are, like, underlying issues there about, like, you know, that, like, people are, like, you know, I don't resonate to this, like, you know, Latinx show that's, like, you know.
A lot of the shows that, yeah, those are for people are, like, Friends, yeah, or, yeah, Parks and Rec or The Office, so.
That for, yeah, years, people, like, who are not white are, like, this show is for white people, you,
yeah,
know,
yeah,
like, so.
Yeah, and I mean, like, there's a lot of shows, like, that are, you know, for people of color that are, like, Netflix originals and don't get past, like, a second, true, or third season. So I think it's kind of a pattern with them, and I think they'll say it's because of, you know, their algorithms and, like, their data that's telling them this, but it's, you know, data can be very biased because of who was the person who created the algorithm. So I definitely could see that being part of the issue as well.
There's also, like, I don't think they advertise shows like this that well. Like, there was a new show about a black dad and his daughter. I saw it, I scrolled by it, but I haven't seen any advertisement for that. And it's something that, like, a few of my friends watched and they said it's funny, but they are also, like, people of color. So maybe it, like, hits them. But if, like, they're trying to advertise to white people too, then it doesn't translate as well. Like, if they like advertise that working mom shows all over Netflix, but this show that I feel like could be on the same level of, like, a sitcom, like a wholesome sitcom that talks about topics, That one's kind of like buried compared to other stuff they have.
Is it is it comedy? I feel like there are stuff that like can break through that's like they're not comedy, and maybe it's because like, I mean, this is the thing of like, it's come up recently in the past year or so, like Rob is a podcast that the three of us all listen to, I've podcasted on, like there's been a lot of talk like about like shows like Big Brother, where there's like, you know, people are watching these live feeds, there's like microaggressions, and people are seeing like racism and like how it's like on TV, and there's been this big push for like an increased amount of like representation for people. And then you see those people like in comment sections of like these, or they're like, why do people have to talk about like race all the time? It's like, because it's like inherently like, because we're seeing it, and like, you know, it there's this thing that I was talking about on the we watched the Pride documentary series on FX, and we were talking about how like some, I think at one point I said like, yeah, it's funny how they picked like all activists, and then I was like, actually I don't think those were all activists. I just inherently was like, they must be an activist or like a queer trans person, and like in my head, because they are like, and they're in this documentary, but they're like talking about issues, and I like immediately put them in the activist bucket, which I think that like, I don't know, like, is a thing that, like, happens for, I think, queer people, and then also, like, people of color, who, like, you kind of get put into this, like, oh, you talk about, like, you know, talk about racism, or, like, you know, race, or, like, gender, or sexuality, like, all the time. It's like, yeah, because that's, like, what my life, like, it's not everything about my life, but, like, it intersects with so many things of my life that, like, I inherently end up talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I don't know where I was going with this, but, like, the idea that, like, these, like, comedies that are, like, you know, like the worst, the like the opposite of like, to remove all the like political nature would be doing like a disservice to what it's like to live as like a Latinx person in America, even in like 2021, you know.
Yeah.
And so I feel like these shows, like the shows that are like comedies, often inherently have political issues attached to it, or like controversial issues, or you know, whatever, that like I think some people are view like, oh, why can't they just like not talk about it? It's like, because it's so like intersected and ingrained in the way our like society works, that like, of course, like a comedy like this is going to have political, like,
yeah,
political episodes.
And even still, like, I also think there might be aspects of the show that succeeded so much because like, this is a very white Latino show. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. There's not a lot of like Afro-Latino characters at all, and I'm just trying to like think of all the seasons, and like this, it's very focused, and like we talked about colorism, and they do talk about like topics such as like race and stuff, but they don't really talk about like what it means to be Afro-Latinx. And like a lot of the Netflix, or not even just Netflix, a lot of the Latin shows out there are very through the white Latinx lens.
Well, this is the In the Heights controversy, right?
Like, yeah.
This was on Twitter the other day that, like, there's a successful Latin musical drama that's, like, getting rave reviews. People say it's very good. And then the criticism is that it's, like, a lot of the actors who are cast are very light-skinned.
Yeah.
Latinos.
Especially when you're, like, in Washington Heights. Like, yeah. That's, like, very much more diverse area.
Yeah.
But, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's something that there was an article, I think I retweeted it a few weeks ago, after the Selena creators talked about how there was like such a low budget for this Latin show. But part of me is also like, and then I looked at all the people that interviewed, and it was a lot of lighter Latinos. So that's just something like to keep in mind with these shows, that they're still great and everything, but there's also like a lot of issues surrounding, like, it's not a one all be all.
Yeah.
Thing.
Yeah. I mean, the thing that we say on this show a lot is like, there could be bad queer movies. It just like sucks when there's so little of them that like,
yeah,
all we get is like a bad representation. Just like, let there be more, you know, representation, everything. Yeah. I'm going to give a shout. I don't know if you haven't listened to the podcast, the Black Voices of Podcasting, on the Rob is a Podcast network. I think it's like very interesting. It's very, like, I think they had 16 Black voices, people who podcast on that network, talking about their experiences, especially over the last year, sort of the past, present, and future. And it just was very good. And there was some stuff in there. I think Josh Williams was talking about how like we care about something when we connect to it, right? That's like,
yeah,
when we, and I think that's true. And like, there just needs to be more, you know, representation, more media that's diverse, so that, you know, who cares, you know, if there's one bad one, who cares, you know, we'll move on to the next, you know, show.
Yeah, not to plug, continue the plug of that, but several folks who have been on our podcast were, nice, on that. So
yeah.
Matt Scott is actually, who is on,
yeah,
an episode that we did, he is actually the moderator for that. And then Amon Adwin, who is,
yeah,
one of our episodes, is interviewed on it. So Yeah. If you want to hear about that, they don't like dive deep into like the pack, you know, it's mostly about reality television. They don't go super, super deep into that. It's more about their experiences as Black people who podcast. So yeah, it's like a couple hours long, totally worth it. You know, go on a long walk, do your dishes, listen to it. Yeah. It's important.
Hi, how am I going to do my dishes when I'm on a long walk? It's so hard.
Well, like, you go on the long walk, then you get home and do your dishes.
Okay, all right. Yeah. All right. Separate things. Okay, got
yeah.
it.
Come on, Grace. You can't podcast if you don't know how to walk and do dishes at the same time.
Yeah.
But I also want to echo the retweet and, like, plug of this podcast. It's really phenomenal. And also, like, if you like reality television, also take a look at the Asian representation mm-hmm. from yeah. last month with Sasha Joseph and Kevin McLean,
yeah,
as well, yeah.
And I hope these continue on Rob's podcast. Hopefully, we get a queer one.
I talked to Matt about it.
And hopefully, we get other people from other marginalized groups getting a chance to talk about their experience either as a podcaster or watching television, especially specifically reality TV. But I think we're kind of winding down to the point where we talk about what the episode's about.
I'll flip ask you this first. Does this episode hold up?
Yes. Yeah. In these four years since it aired, yes, it holds up. I think it'll hold up for like time. I hope it doesn't think that it will ever not hold up in like 15 years or whatever, but who knows?
Yeah, we'll come back 15 years from now, but I certainly don't see how it. I think it's like really good representation, sort of like, as I said, like nobody's perfect in this episode. I mean, Alanis, she's just coming out, so like, can't fault anybody there. But like, Penelope is like,
I think Alex is pretty perfect in this episode.
True,
she's a good sibling.
Yeah, I think that's true. And then it's like Penelope is like, again, like that's like fumbling ally, like sort of like doesn't know what to do, but like is definitely wants to be an ally. Is just like, I support you. That's good. And then like, I think just takes all the stuff about like I'm concerned like elsewhere is like the good part.
We didn't talk about the fact that like the conversation with her dad, like I really liked the line that she's like, he was like, does the family know? And he's like, that's not my choice to tell them, like no, because that's for Elena to decide. We don't like have any part of that. And I really liked that line. I don't know who wrote this episode. I should actually like look it up, but
I can look at that.
That was like a really key detail that I picked up on.
Yeah.
It's written by Gloria Calderlin Collette and Mike Tia Glow. Weiss.
Tia Glow's great on Twitter. If you're
directed
Pamela Fryman from the How I Met Your Mother stuff, right? That's a show that does not hold up.
Nope. That show.
We should just cover Neil Patrick Harris at one point.
Oh my god. He is. Ugh. Anyway, I agree. The show really is. Its episode. It feels like very, like it knows what it's talking about when it comes to sexuality and gender and like coming out experience for a young person. But, we never know what the future is going to be like. Maybe in the future be like, oh, coming out is so 2010.
True. You want to come out as gay? That's weird. Yeah. That's odd.
But, I think the only thing holding it back really is that three-camera format that some people just completely overlook. And that sucks. And I think that style can be not all very – a style that holds up very well. But it's if you've never watched that show, it's worth it. Watch it. Just – get through it, you're gonna forget those laugh tracks are there because
you don't have
you're
to get
actually
like,
laughing.
Yeah, it's not like getting through it. Like as soon as like the first, it was like that first scene I was watching, I was like, oh, it's a laugh track show. And then by the end of that first scene, again, I watched Sex Talk first, and by the end of that first scene, I'm like, oh, I like all these people. I like them. Like maybe not Schneider, but everybody else is fine.
From the first episode, my recollection, I feel like they lean on it more, but I feel like there's a lot of like multicam shows. They like rely on the laugh track, especially in the first episode. But like you get used to it, like sometimes you'll notice it, but I really recommend, I know this is a favorite of Kirsten McInnes as well, so if you like the show, support this message of getting it out there.
Yeah.
And who knows, maybe new eyes will like, we can hope, even if it's not like gonna happen, but
so next week or?
Yeah, I actually don't remember what we're talking about next week.
I think we're talking about Soldiers Girl.
Oh yeah, this was your recommended. I've never seen this, so
yes.
It'd be
so
to dive in.
Yeah, so we're talking about a movie called Soldier's Girl next week. It's a huge bummer. It is about the story of. So we already covered the first episode of Trans American Love Story, which is Calpurnia Adams' dating reality show. This is the movie about her lover being murdered by his fellow soldiers because he was with a trans woman, her. Lee Pace of Hobbit fame plays Calpurnia. So that'll be interesting to talk about. I watched it once, probably 10 years ago, so I don't really remember much of how it was. But yeah, it was a sad movie. So
he's also in Guardians of the Galaxy, yeah. In Captain Marvel. Yeah. Ronan the Accuser. Yeah.
He's also in Pushing Daisies, one of the best underrated shows of all time, and Wonderfalls, one of the sad shows to get canceled after 3 episodes. It's gonna be a bummer one we're gonna talk about. Happy Pride.
Yeah.
Closing out Pride with that.
Yeah.
That's right. Felipe, where can people find you on the internet if they want to?
You can follow me on Twitter at WhatTheFleep, and then also I do 2 podcasts, the Brazilian Dragon podcast, currently talking about High School Musical, the musical series, season 2. Actually, another queer character had a quinceañero, Carlos, in the last episode was all about his surprise quinceañero because he was sad that he never got to have one. But his sisters did. So if you are a fan of the High School Musical, the musical series, or the High School Musical franchise, just recorded an episode with Matty Fresh 24, Matt Gagan. And then Scooby-Doo movies, we're also going through there slowly. And on the other podcast I do, Whatcha Doin', we talk about Phineas and Ferb. And I'm a big advocate for, I don't know if Phineas and Ferb was past your time, but
yeah, it was a little bit.
Big advocate for how Buford and Balji are queer couple that we don't talk about enough. So that's one of my big talking points there. But that's with Navi and Will Davis.
Fun.
So that's a lot of fun. And then you can follow those on social media as well, Whatcha Doin' Pod and Brazil Dragon Pod on Twitter and Instagram.
Awesome. Thanks so much for coming in and bringing this episode and telling us about your experience. It was a pleasure.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for being flexible with my schedule this week.
Oh, no problem.
Yeah. And otherwise, you can find the podcast, Hold Up Podcast 1P, both on Twitter and Instagram. I'm not doing much else in the online space right now. But if you want to support what I'm doing outside of the podcast, follow Safe Walks NYC, which is a volunteer mutual aid group that I work with provides provides escorts folks home from the subway if they are feeling unsafe at night. And Grace, what have you been up to?
Follow me on Twitter at @HiFromGrace. I just finished wrapping up podcast. We were covering the final season of Pose on the Post Show Recaps patron feed called Pose Show Recaps. So we did all 7 episodes of the final season, and then we dived into the 6-part FX docuseries called Pride. Did a, I think, 2-hour-plus podcast on that with Matt Scott and Brooklyn Zed, my regular co-host. So that was good. On Tuesdays, you can catch me on Twitter or on twitch.tv/DMPhilly for a show called Dragonfly, D&D in Space. I play a giant creature, a firbolg. They're very neat. They're very nature-y. They can go invisible. They're very cool. And I play a cleric who's basically like the Jehovah's Witness of space. I just give out pamphlets promoting my god when I speak to animals. It's very fun. It's very whimsical. It's good. But that's what I've been up to.
Awesome. Well, that's it from us. We'll be back next week with the bummer episode. Have your Kleenex ready.
Yeah.
All right. Bye.
Bye.